home and said, welcome back. Welcome to tonight's program. It's about 7 past the hour. My name is Mike Malloy. Just sitting here watching MSNBC with the sound down. I had the sound up for a while with first Mitt Romney. Oh, my God, please spare me. And now Ron Paul. Oh, my God, please spare me. I don't know where these people live. I really don't. But the fantasy world that they both speak from is just beyond belief. Oh, well, you know, I don't talk about this crap because what Iowa and New Hampshire decides is a bunch of hog snot. You know, I really couldn't care less. Ron Paul places second, Huntsman third. Ooh. You know where they're all going after South Carolina? No, they're all going to go to... check out, see if they can get Denver Broncos quarterback Tim Tebow to endorse them. That's right. Listen to this. This is how degenerate. I can't wait till the Supreme Court says that we can use four-letter words. I mean, real four-letter words on broadcast radio. OMFG. I cannot wait. Anyway, this is what the AP says. Sensing the excitement and loving his message, Tebow is being courted by Republican presidential candidates. The quarterback recently told the Associated Press he's been asked by more than one of the contenders for his support. He wouldn't name names, but did say, well, he'd decline the offer. He said, quote, I think you have to have so much trust in who you support, just from product endorsements to endorsing a candidate, because if that person or company does something bad, it reflects on you. End quote. God, Jesus. Tebow already is a pitch man, of course, for Nike, Jockey Underpants, and FRS Energy Drink, right? You can't work God in there, Tebow, huh? You can't. You can't do a God thing on Huntsman or Romney or Gingrich. Ay, 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 ay. Do 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 do. This is madness. This is what, if you're paying attention and you're looking around, it's. I find this. Easy to do because of the nature of what I do for a living. But if you look around, you'll see that the United States of America is engaged or involved in or having or anyway, whatever word you want, a nervous breakdown completely and totally. You know, on the one hand, the Israeli lobby in this country is pushing the Republicans in Congress who keep mouthing this desire to go bomb the bejesus out of Iran. And meanwhile, the U.S. Navy keeps rescuing their soldier or their sailors out of the ocean. That happened again today. Oh, my God. I don't know. It's brown acid. It's something. Yeah, another six Iranian mariners were rescued, this time in waters off Iraq. But it was a couple of days ago we rescued 13 Iranians. I don't know. I don't know. Well, I got an email from Bob Alexander, so we'll be having a moment with Bob. And this one tonight is a scary one. Scary, not necessarily for the reason you think. Speaking of scary, stick around for that. Speaking of scary, the doomsday clock run by the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, the doomsday clock has been moved forward. That's right. We're now 5 minutes from midnight. 5 minutes. The clock, which has been in use as a symbol of imminent apocalypse since 1947, was at 6 minutes to midnight. Today, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists announced they have nudged it a minute forward, which reflects current trends in world security. Now, the last time the clock hand moved was in 2010, when the scientists moved the hand from 5 minutes to midnight back to six. So now it's moved from six back up to five. In making the decision, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists considers the current state of nuclear weaponry, climate change, and biosecurity. I wonder if they moved it up because of the superbug that has been, flu bug that's been developed now, the airborne flu virus, the avian flu that is now transmissible through the air. I wonder if that's why it moved up to 5 minutes. Plus other issues. They move it up based on a bunch of stuff that could influence humanity's survival or immediate destruction. The closest the clock was to midnight was 3 minutes to midnight. That was in 1984 when the U.S. and the Soviet Union were in some kind of a standoff. Tensions were high. The furthest humanity has ever been from destruction, according to the clock, was in 1991 when the doomsday clock stood at 17 minutes to midnight. And now we're at five again. The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists this time considered factors ranging from Iran's nuclear program to the aftermath of the Fukushima nuclear plant disaster to the state of policy on global climate change. Damn. I remember as a kid hearing about the doomsday clock, so-called, because it started way back in 1947. Was it 47? Yeah. I was just a wee tight dyke. Never mind, forget it. Okay, gay folk, rejoice, rejoice, amen. Pastor Joel Osteen. You know him. He's that tall, lanky, curly-haired dude. He is so damn cute. Woo! He is so, isn't he cute? You've seen him. And his wife's cute. But he has this, prosperity gospel, right? He never talks about good or evil. He talks about, you know, prosperity. But he is really a honey. I mean, he's this tall drink of water. Big, tall boy with curly hair. He is goofy. He is B&G. But he's cute, Kat. He's really cute. Anyway, he was talking with Oprah. He was on Oprah's new program. It's called Oprah's Next Chapter. I know, you thought she was gone. No. So he was talking to her, and he said, the bottom line is, he said, homosexuality is sin. But gay people will get into heaven. How about that? Yay! Gay people will get into heaven. Ah! Sunday night, Oprah interviewed Osteen on her new program, Oprah's Next Chapter. And he got deeply into his views on homosexuality and sin. Oprah asked him, quote, "Will a gay person be accepted into heaven as you see it?" And Joel responded, "I believe they will. Sometimes we look at gay being a bigger sin than being proud or not telling the truth. I don't think God categorizes sins." End quote. And what? Is it time to take a break? Oh, is that what that loud music is? All right, we'll be right back. There's more to this. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Prepare to meet the Lord. When the mushroom of destruction falls, there is a
So, Joel Osteen, I guess on television with, why am I talking about this again? Because we have presidential candidates who are talking about, seriously talking about passing constitutional amendments, demonizing gay folk, making people who happen to be gay unable to do anything. We have presidential candidates talking about Palestinians are like bugs. They don't even exist. We have presidential candidates who talk about black people are on welfare and food stamps. In other words, we are in the middle of the Republican primary season where madness abounds. That's why I'm talking about it. So Pastor Joel Osteen says he believes that God will allow gay folk into heaven because he doesn't think God categorizes sins and God is very forgiving. Osteen made it clear to Oprah that he believes homosexuality is sinful, but Oprah pushed him a bit harder to clarify his stance. No pun intended. She said, "Does that mean that you're saying that you believe that being gay is a sin?" Joel Osteen, he of the prosperity gospel, said, quote, "I believe that homosexuality is shown as a sin in the scripture." Oprah, it's a hard thing in a sense. That's what he said. "Because I'm for everybody. I'm not against anybody. I don't think anybody's second class." He went on to explain that the Bible's message on the matter is clear. Osteen's main point was that homosexuality, should it be considered a sin, isn't any different from other sins. Oh, God. Oh, no. Tim Tebow, please intercede for us all here to God. Tim! Well, as long as we're on the topic, very quickly, what's the gayest U.S. city? According to The Advocate, the gay and lesbian news magazine. Come on, quick. What's the gayest U.S. city? Oh, no, it's not San Francisco. The gayest U.S. city, according to The Advocate, is, drumroll, Salt Lake City, Utah. They write that rather than rely on the U.S. Census tabulation of gay and lesbian populations, which inevitably yield San Francisco as number one, the advocate used different measures to establish what they call per capita queerness, including a city's number of teams entered in the Gay Softball World Series, gay bookstores, openly gay elected officials, and semifinalists in the International Mr. Leather Contest, which is held every year in Chicago. The magazine says, while those unfamiliar with the Beehive State are likely to conjure images of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, far less oppressive than it used to be, Salt Lake City has earned its queer cred. Among Salt Lake City's charms, the Sundance Film Festival, which brings lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender film buffs flocking to the city. Flocking to the city. The director of Utah Pride in Salt Lake City told the Salt Lake Tribune, quote, "If we were having a more scientific survey, I don't know that we would choose these as indicators. I don't know what he's saying. You want the complete list from the Advocate? Number one, Salt Lake City. Number two, Orlando. Then Cambridge, Mass. Then Fort Lauderdale. Number five is Seattle. Number six, Ann Arbor. Seven, St. Paul, Minneapolis. Eight, Knoxville, Tennessee. Nine, Atlanta. Ten, Grand Rapids. 11, Little Rock, Arkansas. 12, Portland, Oregon. 13, Austin, Texas. Then Long Beach, California. Then Denver, Washington. Number 17 is New Orleans. Then San Francisco at 18. Then Pittsburgh, Salem, Oregon. Madison, Wisconsin, Eugene, Oregon, Oakland, California, Boston, and Kansas City." How about that, huh? All those cities in Oregon. Who'd have thunk it? Salem, Oregon, Eugene, Oregon, Portland, Oregon. Holy Toledo. We'll be right back. I knew y'all wanted to know all that. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, bottom of the next hour, we will do the email from Bob. A moment with Bob. From Sheila, "One of my husband's right-wing friends was bitching about gays getting married. So her husband, Ole Yeller, sent him this, quote, 'If you don't like gay marriages, blame straight people. They're the ones who keep having gay babies.'" This is from Jim in Southwest Washington. "Mike, I was listening last night when you read the list of situations when fascism is taking over a country. I'm an old guy, but I remember riding down the road in our Model A with my dad when he said, 'Son, one day you'll be living in a police state.' I guess I was 10 or 12 at the time. My dad was in law enforcement for over 40 years when the police, the sheriffs, and the highway patrol were your friends. I come from a long line of law enforcement personnel, but I tell folks I was overcome by common sense and became a union tradesman instead. I have over 30 years in the millwright trade, in sawmills and paper mills. I went to college, got a degree in sociology with the idea of becoming a cop, but I could see what was happening to the police even before Bush militarized them. I did have the privilege of working a bit in law enforcement when things were still sane in the early 60s, and then Miranda came along and things started to change. A good friend of mine, a South Dakota highway patrolman, got blown away in his front yard in front of his wife and kids over a traffic ticket he'd written that upset the guy. Anyway, it's crazy now out here on the West Coast. We live 45 miles north of Portland, which is a daily bloodbath. Thanks to people like Reagan, the Bushes, and Clinton, folks are desperate for a job, so crime is rampant. Anyway, I love the show. Could you send me a link to that list? I plan to copy it and pass it around to wake some of these people up. Keep it lit, Jim of Southwest Washington." Jim, it's on the way. If you want a copy, just type into Google Brit, B-R-I-T-T. That's the man's name, Brit, and the word fascism. be right there for you. What else here? Oh, yeah. Texas law requiring that an ultrasound image must be shown to a pregnant woman who is anticipating an abortion, and the sound of a fetal heartbeat must be played for her to listen to, does not violate the Constitution, a federal appeals court ruled today. The appeals court overturned a federal judge's decision to block that law. The requirements do not infringe on abortion providers' free speech rights, the federal appeals court said. Chief Judge Edith Jones wrote for the three-judge panel. She said, quote, the required disclosure of a sonogram, the fetal heartbeat, and the medical descriptions are the epitome of truthful, non-misleading information, end quote. The Texas law enacted this year requires abortion providers to display the ultrasound images and describe them in detail. Women cannot decline to hear the physician's description of the image unless they qualify for an exception including rape, incest, or an abnormal fetus. A coalition of abortion providers sued to block the law this past June, arguing that the law made doctors a mouthpiece for the state's ideological message. The First Amendment includes protections against compelled speech. The challengers also argued that would be the Center for Reproductive Rights, the people who challenged this further invasion into the mind of a woman. The Center for Reproductive Rights also argued that disclosure of the sonogram and fetal heartbeat was not, quote, medically necessary, end quote, and therefore beyond the state's power to regulate the practice of medicine. A federal judge in Austin granted the provider's request for a preliminary injunction, ruling that the law violated physicians' free speech rights, but the appeals court disagreed. The president of the Center for Reproductive Rights, Nancy Northrup, said in a statement that this appellate court decision, quote, clears the way for the enforcement of an insulting and intrusive law whose sole purpose is to harass women and dissuade them from exercising their constitutionally protected reproductive rights, end quote. The Texas law is among the most detailed of these ultrasound requirements in the country. Similar laws requiring the presentation of an ultrasound image to pregnant women have been blocked in Oklahoma and North Carolina. Six other states also require abortion providers to perform an ultrasound and provide women with an opportunity to view the image. But in Texas, women are now required. You have no choice, women. None. Texas Governor Rick Perry, who championed the law and is running for president, praised the ruling. So, do you understand what this means? Let's set aside the abortion aspect of it. Because the Supreme Court has never ruled on abortion. The Supreme Court has ruled on privacy. So, the Texas law upheld, I'm sure this will go to the U.S. Supreme Court, but the Texas law upheld by an appellate court says that a woman does not have the right to turn her eyes away, to plug her ears, and that the abortion provider, the physician, must show her the images and play for her the sound recording. Now, this immediately raises the question, what happens if the woman closes her eyes and puts her fingers in her ears and goes, la, 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 will she be arrested? Will she be held in the doctor's office until she opens her eyes and takes her fingers out of her ears? What in the hell is going on here? Look, let me say it again. I'm against abortion. pro-choice people are against abortion. Everybody is against abortion! There are instances when it is absolutely necessary. And those instances are to be determined by the woman who is pregnant, her health care provider, the other person who is involved in the pregnancy, and nobody else. Nobody wants an abortion. Nobody starts a pregnancy with the idea, I think I'll get pregnant and then I'll have an abortion. That's what the right wing wants you to believe. That is a filthy, rotten lie. This is about women. This is about the fact now that the state of Texas says, you will open your goddamn eyes, you will take your hands away from your ears, you will look and you will listen. And you, Mr. Doctor or Ms. Doctor, you do your part. Now, bitch, make your decision. I threw in the bitch, but you know that's exactly what they're thinking. You know it. You know it. The contempt and disrespect. That this ruling indicates that the people of the state of Texas, or at least the legislature in Texas, the contempt that they hold women in, absolute contempt. Absolute contempt. Man. The woman must listen. How do you do that? How does the appellate court say that a woman who is making a decision to have an abortion for her reasons, it's her body, it's her doctor, it's her interior, it's her guts, it's her reproductive organs. And the state of Texas now says, not only are we going to restrict your access to an abortion, but before you have one, in your agony, in your angst, in your indecision, in your fear, in your depression and anxiety, you're going to listen, goddamn you, and you're going to look. You have no choice. How do you do that? How do you do that in the United States of America? How do you do that to a woman? How do you say to her, open your eyes, take your hands off your ears, shut your mouth, stop saying la la la, and look? How do you do that? How do you do that?
Got a couple emails here from people saying, calm down, take it easy. It just freaks me out, you know. To me, the idea of abortion is one of those issues that should only be talked about within the confines of a private conversation between a physician and a woman. And perhaps, if the woman chooses, the male or the surrogate or whatever, her partner, whoever helped get her pregnant, and if she got pregnant through a sperm donation, then her male partner, her female partner, whatever. But it's not my business. It's not a state of Texas's business. It's not the federal government's business. I mean, this is beyond belief. Now, if you're talking about excuse me, if you're talking about denying health care to a child, which some religions in this country do, I'm talking about a 4-year-old, 5, 8, 9-year-old, that is totally dependent on its parents or parent. If you're talking about that, yes, then the state has an interest. But we are talking about a medical procedure that involves an undifferentiated mass of cells that may have started to take the shape of a human being. Or is it a cat? Or is it a goat? Or is it a porpoise? It's hard to tell unless you look at where it is contained. And what happens? Several people have emailed me. What happens if the woman is blind? What happens if she's deaf? What happens if she's both? How do you do it then? How do you force someone to do the kinds of things that right-wingers, fascists, insist you do? How do you do it? Michael in Roswell writes, I wonder what the outcry would be if the courts required that every taxpayer be forced to view pictures of every dead civilian, every dead child resulting from America's wars and covert operations. Isn't the principle the same? Yeah. No, but see, we hide that sort of thing. But as far as a woman exercising control, I mean, how do you even talk about someone exercising control over their own bodies? That's not a given? I mean, how does it come to this? And another reason this is an issue, there are 5 or 6 people. We think they're people, Republicans, who are running to be the Republican nominee. They would deny birth control as well as access to an abortion if that's what the woman chose. These are fascists. Every single one of the Republicans running is a fascist. All of them. Yikes. Gingrich. Al Babe sent this to me. He's the writer, artist, formerly known as Al Gordon. Today, Rick Santorum said that the economy was turning around because people were excited that it was going to be a Republican in the White House. But Gingrich yesterday complained that Occupy Wall Street protesters were blocking his right to free speech. Mm-hmm. He was on that little twit Sean Hannity's program on the Rupert Murdoch Terrorist Broadcast Network. And Newt cried to Sean that he had to cancel an event at his campaign headquarters, where protesters were waiting outside the front and back entrances. Gingrich said to Sean, some of the Occupy Wall Street people frankly have a touch of anarchism in them. I think ultimately the society is going to have to say there are limits to those kinds of folks blocking people from having their right to free speech. But we decided it wasn't worth risking some kind of big confrontation, so we frankly decided to skip past that particular event. Can you see Gingrich skipping? No, I can't either. Thud, thud, thud. He added, I do think we can't be held hostage by those kind of people. At the same time that Gingrich was accusing Occupy Wall Street demonstrators of infringing on his, Gingrich's, free speech, police in Manchester, New Hampshire, were investigating allegations that one of Gingrich's staffers assaulted a protester. Rebecca Burton, who was holding a protest sign at a Gingrich event, told the Hartford Courant, quote, "He pushed me roughly and he said, 'Get out! We don't want you here!'" She said, "He grabbed me and shoved me with absolutely no provocation. I said I wanted an apology. It was completely out of the blue. I had my back to him. I was assaulted without an injury." This is what fascists do. This is what the Nazis did to the Jews. This is what the Israelis do to the Palestinians. This is what the Chinese do to the people of Tibet. This is what you do. This is what the United States... Oh, God, don't even get me started on the list. My freedom of speech is important. Yours is inexcusable. And when I'm president, you can bet your ass I'm going to take care of that, fellas. Oh, and you broads, too. Seven past the hour. Okay, I ate a handful of Valiums. I'm okay. Email from one of our ethics advisors, Bob Alexander being one, Bridget Wolf being the other. From Bridget, regarding women: "Mike, this hatred of and need to control women is ancient and deep. Those who can treat women this way have been doing the same to the Earth Mother for centuries. When we lose our reverence and respect for the Earth, the ultimate and archetypal embodiment of the feminine, our respect for women goes down the drain too. When we commodify the Earth, we treat women as property. When we fight for the rights and freedom of women, we fight for the earth. When we fight for the earth, we fight for women. The equation is deep in our bones, Mike. Most of us are so brainwashed into the male, God-dominated culture, we've completely lost that connection. I'm often in despair about it all." Bridget. Yeah. Yeah, the religions, the Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. And on a timeline, I just put them in reverse order. But you know, the creation myth, it was so important, wasn't it, to subjugate women, to dominate women, because long before the rules and laws and myths and superstitions were laid out in the holy texts used by these three religions, women held the power. So it was very important to erase that. So they have the first man giving birth. I mean, what a way to to say to women, ha-ha. So the first man, Adam, is the first person to give birth. And from that point on, you know, whatever women do, hey, listen, you know, doesn't matter. It's the sex thing. It's the sexuality. And it's a fear thing on the part of men. Just, I mean, it's so blatant. Why do people not get that? Huh? So many men are so terrified of the mighty vagina. Absolutely petrified.
Ah! Oh, my God! What are we going to do?
Quick, let's invent a religion.
All right, then what?
We'll make it male-dominated.
Okay, then what?
Well, what do you mean, then what? Then we make women, like, fourth class.
Then what? The mighty vagina is still there.
We'll get control of it.
No, it'll swallow me.
God. Except it's not funny, and Bridget is right. I had a dentist one time, a woman who was an Orthodox Jew, and she went back to school in Atlanta at Emory, or no, not Emory. She went to Union Theological Seminary. Now, this is a woman with a DDS degree and a master's degree and this and that, but she was sick and tired of the manner in which Judaism treated women. So she went back to school in order to study and to try to find out where it all began, where the Jewish religion decided that women were second class. And it was a time in my life when I was unemployed, and she would write papers to turn into her professor. And I would edit the papers, and that's how I paid for my dental work. It was a pretty good arrangement. And Sherry was great. I got an education because of the papers that she wrote. I also got dental maintenance, too. But I won't forget that. Here was a woman who, her husband was a surgeon. She was a dentist, just general dentistry. But every Shabbos, she had to accept her second-class status within her own religion. Until she finally got to the point, rather than questioning the rabbi, rather than getting into some theological argument with at the synagogue, she decided to check it out for herself. And in the process, I got to edit her papers and to read some of the historic some of the research she was doing, and it was just mind-boggling. I don't know where she got the source material, the reference material, but like I said, she went. Was it Union is that what it's called over here, Kathy? Union Theological Seminary, Columbia. I'm sorry, Columbia Theological Seminary in Atlanta, near Atlanta, not Union, Columbia. My bad. But we moved to Chicago before I could find out if she ever got to the point where she was able to accept what her religion was forcing her to accept. And being an Orthodox Jew, I doubt seriously if Sherry would say to her religion, I've had enough of you, I'm leaving. I do know this, that all her studies and all the papers she wrote would not have had any effect whatsoever on the tenets and beliefs of her religion. Women are secondary. Period. It will not change. And little truth, you know, it used to kind of make me sad because she was a brilliant woman, a scholar. She damn sure took care of my teeth. She was an excellent dentist. But I can remember, and I wasn't reading into this, I can remember her depression as she read about her oppression, as she studied her oppression that was millennia old, all the way back to the creation myths of her religion. How to transcend that, how to get past that. And I would imagine she finally just came to terms with it. We lost touch. I don't know where she is. We had a death here of a former congressman, Ed Jenkins. He was a conservative Democrat. A lot of his policies in Congress I didn't particularly agree with. But in July 1987, during the Iran-Contra hearings, Ed Jenkins drew considerable attention when he confronted Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, a traitor, a disgrace to the Marine Corps, and at the time a National Security Council aide involved in organizing the secret arms sales to Iran so that the money could be used to commit murder in Nicaragua. Proceeds from the sales were funneled to the Contras, which was a CIA-owned and operated counter-revolutionary militia seeking to overturn the Marxist Sandinista government in that country. At one point, Jenkins wondered why Colonel North, according to his obituary, where did I see this, Kathy? I guess it was in the New York Times. At one point, Jenkins wondered why Colonel North, while negotiating with Iranian officials, had made the false pledge that would, quote, obviously come back to haunt us very quickly, end quote. The false pledge that the United States would defend Iran in case of an attack by the Soviet Union. The colonel replied that he thought the pledges were fuzzy enough that once the United States and Iran opened relations, the Iranians would not take them seriously. With rising indignation, Mr. Jenkins criticized the secret fund. He said, "There is not a single official elected by the people of this great nation that had any knowledge of that." Oliver North's answer, "That's the current knowledge, all right. Hehe." We'll be right back. The hour after the next break, stick around because I have a moment with Bob coming up. It's a real scary one. U.S. Agriculture Department is going to close 250 offices this year. The USDA. That's according to Tom Vilsack, the Agriculture Secretary. He announced this yesterday. And the USDA says this will save $150 million a year and help reduce the federal deficit. $150 million? The federal deficit is how? $150 million? Vilsack announced the closures in a speech to the annual meeting of the 6 million member American Farm Bureau Federation that is being held this year in Honolulu. In the past 15 months, according to Vilsack, some 7,000 USDA employees have accepted early retirement. Six other agencies will close 118 offices by the end of September. These agencies are the Foreign Agricultural Service, the Food and Nutrition Service, the Food Safety and Inspection Service, Rural Development, Natural Resources Conservation Service, and Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. In addition, 12 Agricultural Research Service laboratories will close this year, and Congress has approved the closings. Vilsack said all these closures were part of a effort at the U.S. Department of Agriculture to streamline operations and save money. Now, it's interesting. I got this morning, and then this evening I'm watching the news, and immediately when I heard about this and then looked it up online, I thought, FDA, who needs the FDA? The FDA says it will step up testing for a fungicide that has been found in orange juice. You know, get rid of close the Department of Agriculture, close the Food and Drug Administration, close them. Who the hell needs them? FDA officials said they aren't concerned about the safety of the juice, but they will increase testing to make sure the contamination isn't a problem. The FDA said that a week or so ago it had detected low levels of the fungicide carbendazim or something in the company's own orange juice and also in its competitor's juice. Oh, an unnamed juice company contacted the FDA and said, hey, we found this in our juice and in a competitor. What do we do? What do we do? So what happens? Capitalism immediately answers. Orange juice futures surged 11% today. gaining 20 cents to close at about $2.80 a pound. Investors are concerned that increased testing could pinch juice supplies. Why, of course! This is how capitalism works. Screw public safety and health. Hey, let's make some money, quick! Now, carbendazim is not currently approved for use on citrus in the United States, but it is used in Brazil. You ever pick up, when you're in the grocery store and you pick up a carton of juice, that is not, the only orange juice we buy, we don't buy that often, is Florida orange juice, that is exclusively Florida. But if you pick up some of the other brands, look on the side where the ingredients are. Orange juice from the United States, Brazil, sometimes China. Jesus Christ, I wouldn't put my hands on anything from China that I could avoid. Certainly not food, medicine, or anything to drink from China? Are you kidding me? Tropicana, that's the one. And I think Minute Maid the same thing. Next time you go to the grocery store and you're going to buy some orange, you have to pick up a box of Tropicana and take a look at where it's from. Oh, Jesus. The FDA spokeswoman said the company's testing found levels up to 35 parts per billion of this fungicide, far below the European Union's maximum residue levels of 200 parts per billion. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. The U.S. has not established a maximum residue level for carbendazim in oranges. It's because it's been outlawed here. Another example of regulation intruding into the marketplace. By God, when I'm president, there'll be no regulations, Ron Paul says. You're goddamn right, Ron. And don't give me that crapola about how you support Bradley Manning and respect and honor what he did, and he should be freed. Don't even go there, Paul. Leave your scummy, disgusting hands off an issue that doesn't concern you. The FDA doesn't believe these levels of this poison are harmful, and the agency says they're not going to remove any juice currently on store shelves. But, the industry, the orange juice industry, ought to ensure that suppliers in Brazil stop using the fungicide. Oh, yeah! Well, Tropicana and the rest of them, they're just going to get right out there tomorrow morning. And they're going to say, hey, suppliers, stop using this stuff, okay? In my petite black jacket and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. 25 before the hour. Time for another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's moment is entitled A Hard Act to Follow. Hey, Mike, here's a synopsis of a science fiction short story I'm thinking about leaving unfinished. The crime of murder isn't particularly noteworthy. On average, about 40 people are murdered every day in the United States. However, the four murders that occurred on the day in question made headlines around the world. The victims were the former secretaries of defense and state and the previous president and vice president of the United States. The killings took place in California, Maryland, Wyoming, and Texas at 3:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. All four died from a gunshot wound to the head. The gun was placed against the right temple, the trigger was squeezed, and a hollow point .22 caliber bullet fired into the brain did the rest. Everyone in the country was asking the same question. Who was behind it? What organization from what country had the wherewithal to commit such an outrage with such terrible precision and then not take credit for it? The most unsettling aspect of the murders was successfully kept from the press through the combined efforts of the Secret Service, the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA. The newspapers screamed of a vast conspiracy, but the intelligence agencies knew differently. Each murder, though separated by thousands of miles, took place at exactly the same time, and ballistic tests on the four recovered bullets irrefutably proved the bullets were fired from the same gun. There was no conspiracy. The intelligence agencies of the United States were looking for one person who could do the impossible. The person they were looking for was an obscure physicist who had worked for an even more obscure R&D firm in 1999 while completing work on a quantum entanglement experiment. He discovered that although time travel is impossible, stopping time was feasible. Over the next 10 years, working on his own time, he developed a mechanism that could stop time. Up until the moment he had a functioning device, all thoughts of how he could use it were purely hypothetical. Once he had a working prototype, the question became real. What is he going to do with it? Why, save the world, of course. For starters, he could single-handedly bring about the end of war. At that moment, the physicist was as crazy as anyone else who picked up a gun and set out to solve a problem. With righteousness buzzing in his brain, he began his new life's work, getting away with murder for a just cause. He knew he had to get the attention of the powers that be. He just couldn't surreptitiously leave a note on the president's desk in the Oval Office saying, "Completely withdraw from Iraq and Afghanistan." He knew the president probably received hundreds of like-minded missives every day. He had to do something to ensure attention would be paid to his note. And he would have to slightly rephrase it to something like, "Completely withdraw from Iraq and Afghanistan, or you're next." He drove to Washington, D.C., took a White House tour, stopped time, left his note, calmly walked out into a time-frozen world, and bicycled his way back to his car parked on the outskirts of the city. There he resumed the flow of time, checked into a motel room, and avidly watched the news. The Secret Service assured the president it was impossible for any would-be assassin to get to him. Select members of his cabinet reminded him the position of the United States was to never negotiate with terrorists, and the president agreed with them right up until the moment the physicist shot him in the head. The physicist worked his way down through the presidential order of succession until finally the former Secretary of Agriculture's first act after being sworn into the presidency was to withdraw all American military and civilian personnel from Iraq and Afghanistan. Though his work in Washington, D.C. wasn't finished, the physicist decided to take a little breather. He had all the time in the world to drive up to New York and visit a few changes upon Wall Street. stop. There are many reasons for not writing this story. It's derivative. Everyone from H.G. Wells to Rod Serley has taken a crack at the concept of stopping time, but that's not what's stopping me. I believe, as does the physicist in the story, that the dominant culture will not voluntarily transform itself into a sane, a sustainable way of living. It will not voluntarily stop destroying the natural world, eliminating indigenous cultures, exploiting the poor, and killing those who resist. I also don't believe that a political solution is possible within a completely corrupt political system. At the same time, I'm leery of any solution that suspends, even temporarily, the democratic process. But then, I could also argue that a completely corrupt political system has already destroyed the democratic process. But do you know what I really believe in? I believe in the Smith Act of 1940. It says, in part, quote, "Whoever knowingly or willfully advocates, abets, advises, or teaches the duty, necessity, desirability, or propriety of overthrowing or destroying the government of the United States or the government of any state, territory, district, or possession thereof, or the government of any political subdivision therein, by force or violence, or by the assassination of any officer of any such government, or whoever, with intent to cause the overthrow or destruction of any such government, prints, publishes, edits, issues, circulates, sells, distributes, or publicly displays any written or printed matter advocating, advising, or teaching the duty, necessity, desirability, or propriety of overthrowing or destroying any government in the United States by force or violence, or attempts to do so, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both." End quote. I also, Bob writes, believe in the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2012 that affirms the president's authority to detain, via the armed forces, any person without trial indefinitely. How bizarre. 10 years ago, I wouldn't have had any qualms about tossing off a twist on a Rod Serling story. When I read about the latest offense committed by the Bush-Cheney regime, I felt outrage. When Obama signed the NDAA on New Year's Eve, along with outrage, I felt the first stirrings of fear. They're really doing it, I thought. They're really bringing it down right on top of us. And now, for the first time in my life, I've contemplated self-censorship. It was John Cleese as Basil Fawlty who said, "Well, let me tell you something. This is exactly how Nazi Germany started. But this is no joke. This is exactly how Nazi Germany started." People in all walks of life censored themselves out of fear. In a closed society, you wonder about whether you can say something, write something, even think something. The psychopaths in power have passed laws that make it against the law to talk about getting rid of the psychopaths in power. Neat trick. If I ever get around to finishing the story, here's a spoiler alert. It doesn't end well for the physicist. Regards, Bob. Another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. If, by the way, you would like a copy of what I just shared with you, you can go to tvnewslies.org and probably opednews.com. There are several websites now that publish Bob's missives. But out of a sense of deep loyalty, he still sends them to me. And the fact that when we're in Seattle, who bought pizza the last time? Who was that, Kathy? Was it Bob? No. It was Jude. It was Jude who bought the pizza. All right. Well, thanks, Bob. A hard act to follow. man. I realize it's kind of tiresome to keep referencing two things that get referenced on this program all the time by moi, Nazism and Orwell. You know, but how do you avoid it? How does one avoid referencing those two, one fictional and one horrifically real events? The other one, of course, is the nuking of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I mean, how? Who was it that wrote that the two defining events of the 20th century in terms of horror and violence were the Holocaust and the nuclear bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki? I don't know who said it, but whoever said it, yeah, for real. Department of Agriculture plans to close 250 offices this year, and this announcement was made at the annual meeting of the American Farm Bureau Federation that's being held this year in Honolulu. And Prairie 2 writes, the Farm Bureau has never been a farm activist organization in any way, shape, or form. It is simply an insurance company and front for petrochemical interests. Its members are insurance policyholders and have no say over the economic or political policies that the organization lobbies for. These policies just happen to concur with the needs of the Republican, of Republican policy and not with the interests of family farmers. Most of the members of the Farm Bureau have, most of their members have never farmed. I'm pretty sure that the number of farmers they claim to represent exceeds the number of family farmers that are left. Well, you got to figure that. Thanks, Prairie 2. You got to figure that something called the Farm Bureau, or whatever it's called. What's it called? The American Farm Bureau Federation. Anything named like that, you've got to assume it has nothing to do, as Prairie 2 points out, with farmers, just like some of the other AstroTurf organizations that sound, you know, the National Association to Protect Older People, you know, then you find out that something titled that way turns out to be something to destroy Social Security and provide older people with vouchers. And there are three people who are members of this federation. They have an office on K Street in Washington, right? And they're deeply funded by the Koch brothers. Oh, and by the way, coming up next hour, I'm going to introduce you to, if you don't already know him, some of you will. Some of you will be very quick to do a Google on him, Sheldon Adelson. You may have heard his name today because he is Newt Gingrich's financial angel. But I'm going to talk about Newt Gingrich and Sheldon Adelson coming up next hour. And I have a pretty solid feeling that it's going to be a rather loud hour. An Indiana State House committee advanced the Republican-backed right-to-work legislation to the full House in a 15-minute meeting today, one day after Democrats ended a boycott that had blocked its path. You know what's going on in Indiana. They want to change it to a right-to-work state to further destroy unions. This is Mitch Daniels, the governor of Indiana and former aide to, or whatever the hell he was, in the Bush administration. This is partly his handiwork. State House committee sent the measure to the full Indiana State House of Representatives after an 8-5 vote along party lines over loud objections from opponents. They were actually yelling, who had asked for more testimony on the proposal that they see as an assault on unions. If the right-to-work proposal is approved, Indiana would be the first state in the industrial heartland of the United States to adopt such a law. It is in force in 22 other states, but mostly here in the Bohunk South and out west, where people are being tossed out of their houses and are being foreclosed on because there's no jobs. And, of course, there's no jobs because there have been no unions to demand that the corporations not abandon the work. Oh, never mind. So the National Football League Players Association had asked these clowns in the Indiana State House not to do this. And remember where the Super Bowl is going to be played this year in Indianapolis. So rather than just make the request, as the Players Association did, I believe they did it with an ad. Didn't they have an ad in the Times or someplace? Okay, fellas, you've talked the talk. It's time for you to walk the walk. You NFL Players Association members, you made a very good, salient case. Well done. Applause, applause on how tough it is to negotiate and bargain a contract. And you requested, very politely, I might add, that the Indiana representatives not do this to the workers in that state. And now the Indiana House of Representatives, NFL Players Association, have given you the finger. Well, the Republicans have. They have given you the big single digit. If you look wherever you are, if you look toward Indiana, you'll probably be able to see it tonight. So I have a suggestion, NFL Players Association. Why don't you give the finger back and decide not to play the Super Bowl in Indianapolis? Why don't you do that? Why don't you, I know, get Tim Tebow maybe. He has a direct line to God. And surely he's a member of the NFL Players Association. Why not get Tebow on the phone and have him call Mitch Daniels and say, Mitch, this is God. I'm speaking through Tim Tebow. Do not sign this legislation. And if that doesn't work, then why don't y'all consider Detroit, Minneapolis, L.A.? They all have pretty good stadiums. How about Green Bay? Their football team is a clear example of socialism. Stick around. We'll be right back. It is 7 past the hour. Uh-oh, is he going to get into one of his anti-Zionist rants? Oh, no. Well, kind of, but maybe from a different angle. The Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court opened up the gates of hell as far as campaign finance corruption is concerned, right? You know that. I know that. It's been obvious. For example, there were millions of dollars in attack ads paid for by backers of Mitt Romney, super PACs in Iowa. And nobody knows who they are. Nobody knows where the money comes from. Nobody knows what is asked in return. They're just there. And Romney, of course, in Iowa, used these to crush the opposition. Now, Iowa being Iowa, with a bunch of religious freaks out there, they still, Santorum still won it, I understand, by 7 or 8 votes. It was not Romney that won it by 7 or 8. It was Santorum, in fact, because, you know, some votes were found, right? In the New York Times this morning, there's an article, "A Big Check and Gingrich Gets a Big Lift." Uh-oh, what could this be about? Well, actually, it's about an American Jew named Sheldon Adelson, who is an absolute liquidnik. There is a question in my mind, having read about this guy before, he's very, very corrupt. He's a casino operator, owner, whatever, out in Las Vegas, and just filthy to the core. But there has been a question in my mind about this guy, whether his loyalties lie first with the United States or first with Israel. You can make up your own mind about that if you want to do a Google on him and read about Sheldon Adelson. He's a billionaire casino owner and Mr. Gingrich's longtime friend and patron. Now, how could this be? Gingrich is a Catholic. Well, sort of. Adelson is a Jew, completely. The Catholics were responsible historically, and not in faraway history, but just 70 years ago, for the butchery of millions of Jews. So how could this align? Well, you know, politics makes strange bedfellows, right? Adelson has been approached by several Republicans begging him to stay out of the race because he has millions and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars with which he can buy an election. How about this? This is how it works. It's American capitalism. This is American politics. This is how it works. On Friday last, a $5 million check from Adelson to a super PAC that supports Mr. Gingrich, called Winning Our Future, arrived by Monday morning, yesterday. The Winning Our Future super PAC had reserved more than $3.5 million in advertising time in South Carolina, a huge sum in a state where the airwaves come cheap. You better believe that. And the primary is 11 days away. This group is planning to air portions of a movie critical of Mr. Romney when he was at Bain Capital, the capitalist private equity firm that he helped found and run, that was responsible for pink slipping thousands upon thousands of workers, and for which now Mitt Romney is proud. I love giving pink slips to people, right? You heard him say that. So the reason I'm bringing this up is that it shows once again the utter corruption of several entities here. First of all, the utter corruption of capitalism, the utter corruption of our political system, the filthy beyond belief corruption of the Republican Party, and the astonishing corruption of wealthy American Jews who will do anything to corrupt our system in order to protect Israel. Now, if you have a problem with that, turn off your radio or notify all my advertisers or go straight to hell. It's the truth. If you don't like the truth, this is not the program for you. Now, this last minute injection, as the New York Times calls it, of $5 million underscores how last year's Supreme Court ruling on campaign finance has made it possible for a wealthy individual to influence an election. I would say for a wealthy individual to buy an election, and certainly buy the politicians for whom he's kicking in $5 million. Must be nice, huh? Oh, you need some money? Here, let me write you a check. Boom, $5 million. Adelson's contribution to this super PAC that is supporting Gingrich is 1,000 times larger than the $5,000 he could legally give directly to Gingrich's campaign this year. See, even $5,000 is too much. But this miserable son of a bitch, this Adelson, can write a check for $5 million to somebody like Newt Gingrich. And you wonder why our system is ruined. You really think that this political system can recover from this kind of stuff? Don't kid yourself, Bubala. There is no way in hell. Do you really think that members of Congress are going to pass laws restricting these kinds of filthy contributions from people like Adelson to people like Gingrich? Or from people like the Koch brothers to people like Romney? You don't believe that. Hopefully you're not that stupid. The Times reports that several people with knowledge of Adelson's decision to donate to Gingrich's winning Our Future said that he decided to do it because of a 20-year-long friendship with Mr. Gingrich, Gingrich's advocacy on behalf of Israel, and the fact that Gingrich is broke. Well, that's not how the Times says it. The Times says his turbulent months as a presidential candidate. But the rest of it is exactly what the Times says. 2-decade friendship with Gingrich and Gingrich's advocacy on behalf of Israel. Not Gingrich's advocacy on the behalf of the United States! Not because Gingrich would be a good leader for the U.S., but because Gingrich would be a good leader for Israel. Do you understand that? Does that register with you? A close associate of both men, according to the New York Times, who spoke on condition of anonymity to avoid drawing Mr. Adelson's ire. Nothing like a billionaire who gets pissed off when he's trying to buy an election, right? So this guy speaks on condition of anonymity, and he says his friend needed his help. The friend being Gingrich. This anonymous person also told the Times, it's more than anything else a loyalty thing, and he believes strongly in his platform and in Newt's candidacy. A loyalty thing, my aching ass. It's an Israeli thing, it's a capitalist thing, it's a Republican thing, it's a conservative thing. It is not loyalty. There is no loyalty in politics. You want loyalty in Washington? Buy a dog! A spokesman for Mr. Adelson declined to comment to the New York Times through this article. And at a stop in New Hampshire yesterday, Newt said Adelson was operating entirely on his own. Now, Newt, of course, is the one who has just bitched and screamed and stamped his feet and peed his pants about the wealthy Romney supporters who helped send Newt to a fifth-place finish in Iowa. But as far as Adelson, oh, well, Adelson's operating on his own. No, I don't know anything about this. No, we've been friends for 20 years. My position on Israel puts Israel above the United States, but I have no idea what Mr. Adelson is doing. Sheldon is an old friend. I have no idea. What's he doing? He wrote a check? Really? How big? $5 million? Callista, that's enough to pay off your bill over Tiffany's. Oh, we're going to use it to buy advertising on television in South Carolina. They have television in South Carolina? Really? We'll be right back.
Doing things you don't quite understand. But sometimes the lies, they catch up with you. Clever and so cool, but I'm not one of those bosses who just cuts his losses. Firing my friend Carl would be too cruel. fireman.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So where are we here? We're at the nexus of right-wing capitalism, predatory capitalism, American Jewish support for Zionist principles in Israel, even if those principles are contrary or those objectives are contrary to ours. Newt Gingrich's total corruption. And the total failure of our political system to produce anything except people who are owned outright by the people who buy them. So we're talking about a guy named Sheldon Adelson, a billionaire casino owner, and who has just written a check over the weekend to $5 million to a super PAC that is only interested in making sure that Newt Gingrich gets elected a dictator of the United States or gets selected dictator of the United States. $5 million from one person. And the reason this person made the contribution is because he has says he has a 20-year-long relationship with Newt, and he likes Newt's position on Israel. Not Newt's position on the United States, but his advocacy, Newt's, on behalf of Israel, not on behalf of the United States. Keep that in mind because it is central to this article that appears in the New York Times today. Now, for Gingrich, according to the Times, this $5 million could be both a blessing and a curse. Why is that, do you say? This is American capitalist right-wing politics. How could $5 million become a curse? Well, and you have to accept this tongue-in-cheek, which is, I'm sure, is the way that the Times presented it. Adelson, you see, Sheldon Adelson, comes with potential liabilities. Potential liabilities. Well, you see, his main source of income, casinos, could upset some social conservatives. Really? What about Newt's cheating on his old lady? What a series of them. What about his lies? What about his duplicity? What about his sneaking and cheating? Because Adelson owns casinos? Oh, is that going to upset the Christian conservatives? Oh no. Also, Mr. Adelson operates in China. Oh, like how many American billionaires don't operate in China? And the Times says some of his views on Israel are hawkish by mainstream Republican standards. What? Mainstream Republican standards? Don't forget Newt Gingrich said that the Palestinians are fake. They don't exist. I mean, that's a Republican standard. So if you are hawkish beyond that, which is what the Times is suggesting Sheldon Adelson is, if you are hawkish beyond the point where you're saying the Palestinians don't exist, where in the hell do you land? I mean, where does that put you on the hate Palestinian spectrum? Oh, my God. The Times continues, Mr. Adelson's company, Las Vegas Sands, also faces a federal investigation for possible violations of federal anti-bribery laws. Really? No. Well, in other words, he's a good capitalist. This is relating to his operations in the Chinese gambling district of Macau. The company has said, the Las Vegas Sands has said, oh, no, none of that. No. That's that investigation. That comes from the allegations of a disgruntled former employee. You know, this disgruntled former employee really gets around. You ever notice how he, maybe it's a she, how he always turns up? He turns up here and there. Anytime one of these capitalist pig bastards is discovered doing something horrible. It's because of this guy, this disgruntled former employee. I wonder who's financing him. Must be Michael Moore, huh? Because this disgruntled former employee shows up everywhere. Now, he's the reason that Sheldon Adelson is being investigated for possible violations of federal anti-bribery laws. Oh, you damn disgruntled former employee, you. Oh, and by the way, the relationship, according to the Times, between Newt and Sheldon dates back to the mid-1990s. And first centered on their common animosity for, wait for it, labor unions! You see, at the time, Adelson was building his newest resort casino, the Venetian, and became embroiled in a battle with a local culinary union. You know, cooks, people like that. They were trying to organize his employees. Oh, no! So the conflict got worse between Adelson and the unions when he helped finance a campaign in Nevada to pass legislation stopping the ability of labor unions to automatically deduct money from members of unions to finance, you know, union activities. Oh, Sheldon, bad man.
He hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, I'm getting there. 25 before the hour. All right, so what we're talking about here is a guy named Sheldon Adelson, billionaire casino owner out west, who's under investigation by the feds for a possible anti-bribery law violations. He is a billionaire. He wrote a check for $5 million to Newt Gingrich because he likes Newt's position on the Zionist approach to solutions in the Middle East. Which is so far outside, even outside the mainstream of Republican thought, is to render it almost Nazi-like. Newt, remember, is the one who said that there is no such thing as a Palestinian. And he meant thing. He meant thing. He meant to dehumanize the same way the Nazis did to the Jews. It's exactly the same thing. Exactly. They don't exist, therefore you can smash them like bugs if you happen to come across one. Adelson loves that. Sheldon Adelson says, Newt, you're a mensch here. Where would I write the check to? So, the way these two clowns met, these two murder clowns, Adelson and Gingrich, met 20 years ago, is in a mutual contempt for unions. Mr. Adelson was building another casino. You know, one of those great American enterprises really creates jobs, a lot of waiters, a lot of waitresses, but don't unionize. And Newt, of course, hating unions because unions represent everything that Gingrich is opposed to. Fair play, honest opportunity, a chance to better oneself. Newt's a goddamn freak. Newt is a freak. Do you understand that? Newt Gingrich is, well, he's Newt Gingrich. Anyway, Adelson turned to Gingrich, because Gingrich was known for his criticism of labor unions. So Sheldon Adelson went to Newt Gingrich and says, I need some advice. That's according to George Harris. All this is in the Times this morning. George Harris, who worked for Adelson at the time. Aides to Mr. Gingrich, who was at the time the Speaker of the House. But this is how the capitalist-dominated political system works. Just like in the old Soviet Union, you want something done, you go to your man. You go. In this case, it was Gingrich. So Gingrich, while he was House Speaker, helped Sheldon Adelson perfect his anti-union pitch. And then Gingrich was invited to Las Vegas to speak and be honored with a fundraiser. Honored. Do you understand this, True Seeker? You are honored in this country for being anti-union. You are honored for trying to destroy the middle class. You are honored for putting the interests of Israel above those of the United States. You are honored for saying that 20 million people don't exist. You are honored for that. Wow. Oh, in response to all this honor being put on him, Gingrich endorsed the legislation in Nevada that Edelman had paid for. He also, Gingrich did, backed other legislation in 1998 that would preserve the tax deductions beneficial to the gaming, i.e. gambling, industry. You see how this works? Hello, you still there? You see how this works? You don't want to know this, do you? This is your free enterprise system. This is your capitalism. This is your Republican Party. This is your conservatism. This is your country. Yep. And there are people out there who say, oh, just hang in a little bit longer. We can reform the system. Are you out of your mind? Reform something as corrupt as the economic political system in this country, the corruption level that it's got to, you really think it can be reformed? It has to be replaced. Anyway, I digress. Sheldon Adelson, according to the Times, became one of Gingrich's most important patrons. Patrons comes from the Latin for the word father. Sheldon donated $7 million to a political committee formed by Newt back in 2006 called American Solutions. American Solutions. This should have been Newt's slush fund. American Solutions, my ass. Anyway, American Solutions advocates privatization, i.e. destruction of Social Security, greater oil exploration in the United States, i.e. the complete gutting of environmental laws. And they were critical to the building blocks that went into Newt Gingrich's presidential campaign. This is what you do in America. You declare yourself contemptuous of any kind of environmental regulation. You declare yourself contemptuous of labor unions that built the middle class in this country. You declare yourself contemptuous of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, any kind of assistance that would be considered part of the social safety net. If you declare yourself contemptuous of all of them, a Sheldon Adelman will appear. And the Republican Party will say, ooh, who's this man? Actually, it's Sheldon Adelson. They'll say, ooh, who's this man, referring to Newt? Oh, isn't he a lovely Republican capitalist neo-fascist? Well, let's see what we can do with Mr. Newt. According to the Times, these two men, Sheldon Adelson and Newt Gingrich, shared views about much more than just domestic issues. What domestic issues? So far, the Times has told us that the only domestic issues was union busting and making sure that legislation was passed in Nevada that would guarantee tax loopholes. That's domestic issues, New York Times? Well, I guess it is. Anyway, both men, according to the Times, have been staunch American allies of, are you ready, Benjamin Netanyahu of, no, not Ireland, Israel, the Likudnik. Well, Newt fits right in then. The Palestinians don't exist. What if Newt would have said the Jews don't exist? And 80 years ago, he would have, if it would have advanced his political career in Nazi Germany. The Palestinians don't exist. They're a made-up group. They're bugs. Smash them. Oh. Oh. Adelson, by the way, owns a daily newspaper in Israel that is credited with helping Netanyahu return to power in 2009. You see how tight these circles are? But there's one thing an American politician figures out real quick, especially if it's an extreme right-wing proto-Nazi like Newt.
You know I can do business with the Jews. I really can! Especially the American Jews! I can do business with them! Even though I come from a religious organization that assisted in their extermination. But that was then. This is now.
This is so sick. Do you know how creepy and dirty I feel sitting here talking about this article that was on the front page of the New York Times this morning? No, you don't. Because it sounds like, oh, Malloy's just having one of his loudmouth screaming rants going here. No. The reason it's loudmouth screaming rant is because it makes me want to vomit blood. This is what's happened to our political economic system. This. In May 2010, the cover of a special section of Sheldon Adelson's newspaper in Israel featured a full-page photograph of Newt Gingrich in front of an American flag, with Gingrich criticizing the Obama administration for not moving more aggressively against Iran. Gingrich wrote in the article, quote, "Evading the confrontation with evil may bring a second Holocaust." What? But I thought Holocaust, capital H, was trademarked. I thought it belonged to the state of Israel. I thought it belonged to the people whose ancestors were butchered by the Nazis. But Newt Gingrich can toss it out as if he were talking about a soccer game someplace? Evading the confrontation with evil, that would be Iran, may bring a second Holocaust, Gingrich wrote in the article. And then he says, of course, the kicker, the mistakes made by the White House, that would be Barack Obama, will exact a terrible price. So what is Adelson with his newspaper, Netanyahu with his government, and Gingrich with his statement? What are they advocating? What are they advocating? Can you put it together? Very quickly now. Newt Gingrich is appearing in a foreign newspaper advocating a policy of destruction against another country. And now he wants to be president after being backed with millions of dollars from the man who owns the newspaper in the foreign country? And you wonder why I scream and froth and rant and rave about the corruption of this filthy political economic system of capitalism under which we all now live? Are you kidding me?
His place in heaven, because he might just die.
This willingness, eagerness, I would say, on the part of Newt Gingrich to publicly criticized American policy toward Israel during both the Bush and the Obama administrations has, as the Times says, distinguished Mr. Gingrich from his Republican rivals. That's according to Daniel Kurtzer, a former ambassador to Israel under President George W. Bush. And Gingrich's views often were those of Sheldon Adelson. And as the Times says, early on, Adelson was expected to play a central role in Gingrich's campaign, perhaps as finance chairman. But in June, remember, Gingrich's campaign seemed to just fall in on itself, just collapse. His campaign manager, half dozen senior advisors, they all resigned. Within days, Gingrich rebooted his campaign, speaking at a fundraiser for the Republican Jewish Coalition, where Mr. Adelson sits on the board. This is before he said the Palestinians are a made-up people. In the days before the Iowa caucuses, according to the Times, as Gingrich's poll numbers fell under a withering assault from Restore Our Future, that's the super PAC backing Romney, supporters of other Republican candidates said they urged Mr. Adelson to hold back or even endorse a different candidate, not Newt! Why not? So, according to the Times, Adelson held off. You know, you don't want to back the wrong horse. But then Newt blossomed. Newt, in all his corpulent, obese glory, did the one thing that Adelson couldn't resist. Newt declared in an interview last month that Palestinians are an invented people, which translates into they had no historical claim to have their own state. They don't exist. They're invented. They're not real. Therefore, they can be smashed like a bug. They can be ignored, swept to the curb, pushed into the gutter. Forget them. And according to the Times, it inspired, having said that, it inspired a new round of enthusiasm for him among many conservative American Jews. What? What? I hope the New York Times is bracing itself for some really strong, shall we say, letters from the Anti-Defamation League, from the American Jewish Congress, right? A statement like that? When Gingrich declared that Palestinians were an invented people, it inspired a new round of enthusiasm for him among many conservative American Jews. But those are the same kinds of statements used by the German intelligentsia in the 30s about the Jews. Oh my goodness. Morton Klein, president of the Zionist Organization of America. Yes, there is one. The Zionist Organization of America says regarding the Palestinians are an invented truth. Mr. Klein says, quote, not many others are willing to say that, but it is the truth. Ouch. Sounds exactly like Heinrich Himmler. Oh, my goodness. Sounds like, what was the guy's name, Heydrich? The one who put Himmler's plan to eliminate the Jews into play. Listen to these people. These are Americans. Listen to these people. And then Adelson had to add his two cents worth. He says, quote, he said this in an interview with Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, quote, read the history of those who call themselves Palestinians, and you will hear why Gingrich said recently that the Palestinians are an invented people, end quote. Wow. I don't know. Does this mean anything to you? The only reason I brought this up for this whole entire hour is to show you how corrupt the system is. Do you think the system can be reformed when you have this kind of money, attitude, lies, deceptions, racism playing into the selection of an American president? No? You don't care? Yeah, I probably don't either. Just wanted to point it out. Oh, by the way, Fred Zeidman, a Texas energy executive who is another prominent Jewish political contributor, according to the New York Times, and a supporter of Mitt Romney, said he was among those who called Mr. Adelson, and they talked about why he was still backing Gingrich. And according to Zeidman, Adelson replied, quote, as long as Newt is in the race, we are going to be with Newt. We can't abandon him now, end quote. Well, like I said, I would suggest the New York Times brace itself for an onslaught. Hell, we probably should brace ourselves here, Kathy, for an onslaught of the same kind of hate mail now that's going to come in. Oh, you anti-Semitic bastard, you. That's usually the way the emails to us begin. May your daughter rot in hell. That's usually the second line. Does any of this disturb you? The reality is Newt Gingrich has as much chance becoming president as I do. But it shows the utter and absolute corruption of our political economic system. It shows exactly where the money comes from. Exactly what the goal is. And people still think that this system can be reformed. Well, and by the way, before you write your hate mail to me, read the article in the New York Times, and you will find that I deviated from that article. It begins on the front page of today's New York Times very, very little. The only way I deviated was by screaming. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.